Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. It's time for the baseball podcast with David Brown. David.
Hello again, everybody.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm tired, but I've saved what energy I have for this.
Oh, I appreciate that. So do all of our fine listeners.
Well, they better.
So you are, of course, the senior MLB writer. Did I get that right? Senior? National. Senior.
So let's say
you're
national.
Senior national. You're at the senior nationals. Now that's something else. That's a tournament for
the Great Lakes Dragaway.
Sunday. You are the national MLB writer for Bally Sports.
Yes.
And I'm not that. I have this podcast at pointlessexercise.com and a newsletter at pointlessexercise.com. And that's all I have in my life. It's just
but you things. Do you do fill out some pretty good Cubs and related content. So I think to say don't shortchange yourself too much.
Yes, I'm an incredible slouch.
Fair enough.
This week we actually have games we could talk about. It doesn't have to be theoretical anymore. We've actually seen things happen. We've seen players play and things that count. This time it counts.
Yeah, we get to see how wrong our predictions were and, you know, what we should have been paying attention to all along. And
I picked the Cubs to win the Central, so I'm in great shape.
All right.
They are running away with it at 3-1. And I think the Cardinals are going to be 4-1.
Albert Pujols hit a home run.
Well, that's nice. That was, I assume that was his make-a-wish.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because we were all excited. Cub fans were disappointed on Sunday because they had the lead. They blew it twice. No, they blew it once. They blew a lead, then they blew a tie. Mostly because Jonathan Villar decided, you know, I should slide into first. Mm. And I should probably try to slide the last 38 feet. And just be out by like a fingernail. Tying run would have scored had he been safe.
That's not frustrating at all.
But he was out. But still, everybody was excited. Took 2 out of 3 against the Brewers. Do you know in 19 games against the Brewers last year how many times the Cubs beat the Brewers?
3? 4.
That
was close.
They're already halfway there. We were excited. Then the Brewers went to Baltimore, got shut out. Because the Brewers, even watching the games, I was like, they're going to have a hard time scoring points. But they can worry about that. I'm not going to worry about that. The Cubs' rookie sensation. That seems ridiculous,
yes.
Calling a 27-year-old man a rookie sensation.
The young man.
But he is younger than the guy who got Rookie of the Year votes for them last year, Patrick Wisdom. Seiya cannot be stopped. How about this factoid? He is the first player in Cub history to have 8 RBIs and 4 walks in his first 4 games.
That's magical.
It is.
I love that. I love...
Seems oddly specific.
It is. Well...
Because yes, homers and walks are what... Those are the two things you're always equating.
Well, it's, you know, with the best hitters ever, like Ted Williams. I mean, he was a batting average guy and on base percentage guy too, but that the whole two of the three true outcomes are right there. So, and it's good to have another, just a guy who knows what he's doing up there. You know, he's not just going for home runs or whatever the trend is. He has a plan. It seems like he's smarter than the other team. And I'm glad that America has brought him over and that he's on the Cubs especially, but that we as a nation now have him to enjoy.
Well, clearly we have Tom Ricketts to thank.
I guess.
He oozed the charm all over Saya.
Should we send him a card?
And Saya said, fine, I'll come play for you. You seem fine.
I remember talking about that a couple weeks ago, and I was thinking to myself, no, we want him to come. Why are they sending Tom Ricketts?
No, if they wanted to scare him off, they'd have sent Todd. I don't know if how familiar with Todd Ricketts and his body of work, but
I've heard a couple stories, but well, he's here and he can't go back, so it's over.
So it's funny. I hope somebody took Saya aside on Sunday night and said, okay, so far you've seen Corbin Burnes, Brandon Woodruff, and Freddie Peralta. It does get easier, we promise you. And then, so, sees the Pirates today, two home runs. Why not? He's like, you're right, it does get easier. So that was fun. It's good to see. And the Cubs have had good starting pitching so far. Drew Smyly today befuddled the Pirates. I don't know that that's that hard to do. He did it.
Right. It is, remember last year when they befuddled the Pirates when the Pirates were a bat, and it was just very confusing for them to run the bases, and they are befuddled run in the general.
Just run in order to confuse the Pirates, simply start running the bases backwards. They will yes. not know what to do. Yeah, that's one of the most amazing plays in baseball history. Not just the fact that all they had to do was ignore Javi,
right?
And just go step on the base. And they couldn't. They just, it was like a little kid at recess. They just chased him. It was great. Javi off to a nice start with the Tigers.
He did.
He won the opener with a very Javi thing. The thing I appreciated the most about it was he immediately knew.
Right.
Like he was the one, he's like, no, that hit the wall.
Right.
You can't get anything by Javi Baez. He notices everything.
It took me several replay viewings to realize that it hit the wall first, and I was like, oh no, it hit the glove, and then it came forward, but no, it had hit the wall. Yeah, and he was on it the whole way. You're absolutely right. He's got that sixth sense or whatever.
And then he hit
fly balls.
Then he hit a very, very long home run last night into a very, very empty Comerica Park.
Yeah.
Outfield. Javi, you're gonna have to get used to playing by yourself.
Right.
Although the Tigers, they might not be that bad. Anthony Rizzo hit a home run in his first two games with the Yankees this year. So good for Tony. And Chris Bryant had a great Sunday against the Dodgers, where he reenacted the Brant Brown play. And as someone pointed out to me, Brant Brown was in the dugout for the Dodgers.
He was.
He's some sort of coach. I didn't know that.
I'm not sure I knew that either.
I know Mark Pryor was there. I didn't bother to check. It just sounded good.
So he might not have been, but your source says he was.
Yeah, my source. I just one source. That's all I wanted. Sounds good. Or maybe there's just a guy named Brant Brown. Maybe it's Brent Brown, the old Sixers head coach.
Yes. That would be a little stranger, but it could be true.
You know, with the Dodgers, who knows? They can convince themselves. Oh, this is innovative. We're going to hire an NBA coach to sit in the dugout. bases loaded, two outs, high fly ball to left field, and clang, and all three runs scored. But the Rockies came back and won the game, which was good. So I teased you with this. Not that I was teasing you. That would be mean.
Stop it.
We got a new feature.
Yes.
And it's sponsored. So this is good.
Really?
Yes, the most. I got it was great. It came in. I got a, it. It was well. It was strange. It was. I got a fax. I don't have a fax machine, but I got a fax. The most technologically advanced telephone. When you think technologically advanced telephones, you think the good folks at Jitterbug.
With the big buttons.
The big buttons. The official phone of Bruce Levine and Bob Nightingale. They are sponsoring this, which is Calls of the Week. So I'm going to play for you three of the most exciting calls of the first half week of baseball.
Wow.
So here's the first one. We can make a game of it. Can you name who they are? Considering they say the name of every player involved. I think it's probably pretty easy, so we'll just enjoy.
Down the left field line, Ruff is on the ball. Ruff is on the move! They're going to wave him in! Ruff is on the move! And this game is over!
So that was Dwayne Kuiper calling an Austin Slater double that scored Darren Ruff from first base. Very exciting. And so you would think that is like the most exciting call of the week, right? I mean, that's pretty good.
Pretty good.
Even got the little voice quiver going, and the second Ruff is on the move to show just how excited he was. But I can top it. I can top it twice. Can you imagine that? These next two calls are about as good as it gets.
Line drive hit to deep left field. Yelich looks up, and this one sails into the bleachers for a two-run home run. 3-0 Cubs. Excuse me, 3-1 Cubs.
He apparently had said just before that, he's like, you know, the thing about announcing, the only thing you really have to do is make sure that you don't swear and you get the score right. Well, whoops. But I can go one better. I can do one better than that, even. And this is the Jitterbug most exciting call of the week.
Here's the payoff pitch to Suzuki. Hit in the air, deep right center field. Giving chase is Reynolds. He's at the track. He looks up, and this one is gone. Seiya Suzuki with his second home run in the major leagues, going the opposite way, and the Cubs take the lead. Here's
kind of a rough week for Zach, but that's nothing new for Zach. I don't know if you saw the home run, but it's not like it just scraped the back of the wall. It was several rows back.
Right.
And I don't quite understand how he didn't know at first. And it's like, well, give him credit. I mean, he's doing the game remotely. No, he's not. He's there.
Yeah.
That was last year's excuse.
Right.
Don't get to use that one this year. So yeah, that was just a long, tortured setup for me to make fun of Zach Zaidman twice by saying two terrible home run calls to Dwayne Kuiper, showing how you're supposed to call a big moment.
The first one was all right. I mean, by comparison.
So there you go, the Jitterbug Calls of the Week. So one of the things we've had this week is games on weird services and channels and people not knowing where they can find anything. It's not going to be until May 8th. Peacock. The Cock is going to get into the game, and they are doing a Sunday morning game. And they're not even hiding. They're calling it the Sunday morning game because some of them will be at 11:30 Eastern, 10:30 Central. that's like 4:30 in Guam. And then some of them will be, most of them are either going to be like 10:30 our time or 11. And I was saying that for me, this is great. I love it. I can't get enough early morning sports. I'm a guy who, I get up, I watch the English Premier League, I watch F1 racing. And I even joked on Twitter, I said, all I want on Sundays is, how about I work out a deal with MLB where I get up in the morning, I go, I take my morning dump. As soon as I'm done, I tweet Rob Manfred and say, start the game. And he gives them the go ahead and they start a game. But it's not great for everybody, is it?
No. No, I mean, all you got to do is watch. I mean, that's why it's great, because you've taken your dump and you turn on the TV. You know, people like me, but actually not even people like me so much, but the ball players themselves. It's really early in the morning, especially, I mean, I don't know if they've had Saturday night games or they schedule it so they don't. I haven't looked that closely.
I guarantee you they've made no such accommodations.
Well, I just had some hope. I'm sorry. It's really early. And people who have to set up the ballpark and the cameras and make sure it's clean and all that stuff. And it's quite a quick turnaround time between Saturday night and Sunday morning. So it's good for us as viewers, and I'm not sure about anybody else.
Well, here's what it reminds me of. So I am the proud graduate of a Mid-American Conference university, and the Mid-American Conference years ago basically said to ESPN, what do we have to do to get you to show our games? And they're like, how'd you like to start playing on Tuesday nights? And they're like, fine, we'll do it. And if you've ever been to one of those Tuesday night games, which I have, it's very spacious. You can relax and take up an entire section if you want, because 99% of the people who are watching it are watching it on ESPN. Right. You know, the band is there, and that's about it. The band and the cheerleaders. And it's a scheduling thing done with no regard for the actual fans. It's done with, all right, we could sell commercials in this, and we'll give you guys a check for $1 million. And then Mac, they're not going to turn it down. And this was exactly baseball. This was NBC Peacock going, hey, we'll write you a nice big check. And MLB's like, well, I don't know. You know, we're already straining the relationship with our fans with this lockout. Boy, I don't know. Twist my arm. Yes, we'll take it. And if that means that we get 11,000 people for a 10:30 game, the TV check still clears.
Yes.
We're cool with it.
Well, it is a that is a similar attitude that they, you know, during the lockout, we were talking about how, well, the owners didn't really care if there weren't any games in April because, you know, the leverage and the local TV deals wasn't kicking in until May started or so. And, you know, they look at April as almost like a nuisance month, something they have to have. And they're just worried about the postseason and whenever their contracts kick in. So as far as rebates go, so it's you can see their line of thinking when you put it into that context.
Well, and they, you know, they, everybody gets a nice big crowd on opening day. And then a lot of teams don't draw for the next several days in a row. So maybe next year they can somehow, every day is opening day. Did you miss yesterday's opening day? We got another opening day for you today. So 50,000 of you are going to want to come hang out here.
And, second chance opening day, like lottery ticket.
Wait till you see what celebrity throws out the first pitch. I've got a hint, hint, hint. It's a Belushi. So there was a time when the Cubs did get really, really loose with the definition of celebrity for the celebrity seventh inning stretch singer.
Sure.
And we had the immortal, Kelly Pickler, who thought that the song was Buy Me Some Peanuts and Apple Jacks. We had Jeff Gordon talking about how excited he was to be at Wrigley Stadium. Just people who just clearly, there wouldn't have been. We had Mike Ditka literally show up late from the golf course, and that was when he did the 12-second version where he's all sweaty and out of breath. And the last time that happened to him, he was in a weight room, and Steve Kazer had to save his life. And so they said after some of that, and then they would used to make Chip and Steve and then Len and Bob Brenly, they had to interview all of them.
Yeah.
That was part of the deal. You were sitting there in the booth getting ready to sing. They were going to have to talk to you in the top of the seventh. And then they cut that out. You're not guaranteed that you're going to be on TV, and they cut down on they did a lot more. Well, they had video boards finally, so Harry could you could sing along with Harry, and they've got a Ernie Banks one that they use a bunch, and so they basically said we're gonna save this. These are gonna be real celebrities. We're not gonna do this, you know, the cast of some Fox reality show. We're actually gonna do it, and so here in Game 3 of the 2022 season, they proved how serious they were. I was a kid, and we got Jim Belushi. Jim claimed that the Cubs had never lost when he sang. And I'm sure that was bullshit. And then they lost. So if that was true, he doesn't ever need to be invited back because the streak's over. I mean, if that was the reason we were still bringing him back.
Does that Harig have any stats on that, do you think, we could look up?
Oh, I would think. He's got to be tracking the record based on who's singing.
I ran into Belushi once with my friend Howie in an elevator at Soldier Field a few years ago. I don't think it was a playoff game, but it was a night game. And
you got on an elevator at Soldier Field? You're a braver man than me. I mean, I know new Soldier Field, things are supposed to work, but still, yes. It's built by the Park District. So.
Well,
you're lucky.
I mean,
you're not still in that elevator.
I made it out. I'm here.
Yeah.
And I think Howie was a little drunk, and Jim was a little.
Oh, I can't imagine.
And Howie gave him a big old slap on the back and said, "What's up, Belushi?" And it hurt him. And he grimaced. And I thought, "You've just killed Jim Belushi." Yeah. But he was okay. It was one of those things that's more amusing to me because I was there, but I think anybody would have appreciated it.
Well, I mean, it's a highlight of my season every time that they bring Tom Dreesen out. And
he's still alive?
He is. Oh, he's still alive, yes. Yeah. He tells the same three stories.
All right.
And Marquis has footage of one now that they show. He was a bat boy.
Uh-huh.
He was an adult bat boy. At Dodger Stadium.
Yeah.
They gave him the full Cub uniform, and they have footage of him retrieving bats for other grown men. And he did it several times. Like, he's a good luck charm. Let's keep bringing him back. He's got that one. And then he's got two stories about Frank Sinatra being really mean to him. And then that's pretty much it. But we hear them all every time. Oh, Frank's a great guy. Great guy. You know, I opened for him for the last 20 years of his life. Every day. I was with him more than Ava Gardner. I don't want to hear the rest of it, Tom. I don't. But he'll be back. He's on the... He apparently made the celebrity cut list.
Well,
I don't know if he's above or below Jim Belushi.
I think they just worry about hurting his feelings.
Yeah. Why? They don't have to actually broadcast it.
They could just pretend.
Right, just his mic, just don't turn Tom's mic on. Just, you know, let him start tell a story. He'll amuse himself for 5 minutes. We'll just use natural sound for the inning. It'll be fine. The fans at home won't even notice.
Ambient noise.
Yeah. It'll be great. We are back to, because Boog Shambi is the radio voice of Sunday Night Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
He will not be doing Sunday Cub games. So, we had the rotation once again, Virgil Patrick Hughes, Beth Mowins, and Chris Myers.
Yeah.
Pat's fine. You know, we're used to Pat, love Pat, even though, and I don't, it's, some people complain that he's doing a radio call on TV. He's telling us everything. He's still describing the uniforms.
Right.
Pat, I don't know if you know what television is. But they're actually squeezing a picture into people's homes. You can see it. It doesn't bother me because, honestly, do you expect him to change for, like, he's going to do, like, 18 TV games.
Right.
Just let him do it. That's fine. Beth, I really like Beth. I think she's good.
Yeah.
And Jim DeShays really likes Beth. And so they have, like, a nice rapport. And Chris Myers is ungodly terrible.
Almost, I used to like him.
Almost unwatchable.
25 years ago.
Yeah. And he was going to be, if not for the pandemic, the one saving Chris from the pandemic, That was one of those Lens last year, and Len was going to he was going to do Fox games. He was going to be like Fox's number two, so he was going to be gone quite a bit on weekends. And so, and Marquita decided Chris Myers was going to be the only fill-in, and Cubs Twitter went nuts. And they don't. Marquita doesn't care. If they cared about the reaction on Twitter, they'd do everything differently than they do it. But then when they, I don't know if it's because he got too much NASCAR stuff to do or whatever, but they came up with they added a couple of people to the rotation. But this is good. I don't know. Do you know how this is true? Do you know how Chris Myers got his job at Marquee? This is the kind of thought that's going into the decisions at Marquee.
Why don't you go ahead and tell the story?
He got his job because he's friends with Bill Murray. And Bill Murray told Mike McCarthy, not the former Packer coach, who's the Cowboy coach, but the guy who runs Marquee, you got to hire Chris Myers. Okay.
Just like that.
In fact, actually, when Twitter really went nuts was when Len decided to quit the business and go raise alpacas or whatever he's doing now. They were just going to have Chris Myers be the announcer. Oh, we got Chris Myers.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, no. And they did a nice job. Boog was a good get. That was good. Saved us. But, ugh. So we got the Peacock games coming up. Apparently, like, right now, there's a TBS game. Did you know this?
This moment?
Yes.
Tuesday night?
Recording, Tuesday night. I believe it might even be the one that I have on here with no sound. Giants Padres, perhaps.
I've got that on MLB TV on the local broadcast. So, like a national Ron Darling broadcast or something?
They're a commercial right now, but yeah, it's on TBS. So that's
is it Chip and Ernie Van Wieren?
God, I hope not. Ernie Van Wieren, I like that. It's a combination of Pete Van Wieren and Ernie Johnson Sr.
And an accident on my part. So I'm sorry.
And Don Sutton.
An amalgam.
And
well, no longer with us, unfortunately.
I don't think Ernie Johnson Sr. is. Pete Van Wieren, I think, might be alive. Joe Simpson.
I don't know. Was he alive on the air? I don't know.
I don't know. He fell asleep a lot.
Joe Simpson.
I liked it when TBS got postseason games. They just, hey, we're already paying Joe. Put him on one of the crews. Like, what? Craig Sager, too. We need a sideline guy for baseball. Have Sager do it. He's got some crazy jackets. Fans will love it. So apparently Tuesday night TBS, which is so well advertised that the only reason, here's how I knew that it was a thing. When I went to change the channel to watch Giants Padres, I got three options of how to watch it. I could watch MLB Extra Innings, San Francisco, San Diego, or TBS. And I was like, what?
Do they not do Sundays then anymore? Sunday afternoon?
Well, no, because I believe the Sunday game is now the Peacock.
I know, but the timing of that is earlier, but I guess, okay. The Peacock game is going to be in the morning as we, I don't know if we hinted at that or not, but I can't remember if what we talked about was while we were recording or pre, but so the Peacock game will be in the morning.
Yep.
There's no more TBS game.
Bob Costas is doing the game. I ran into Bob in the airport once.
Did you apologize?
Yeah. Knocked a little fucker right over. No. it was a perfect time to run into him. It was the day after Game 5 of the 2016 World Series.
Yeah.
And I had about a 30-second chat with Bob Costas. I said hi. He said hi. And I said, do you think the Cubs are going to come all the way back? And he said, I hope they do, but I don't think they're going to. And then he was off, and he was wrong. So
he was.
Sorry, Bob. He was flying back to Palm Springs, maybe? I don't think he still lives in St. Louis. And I was off to Vegas, because that's where I really wanted to be for Game 6 and 7 of the World Series. I was in Vegas at a convention. But then we have We also have games on an odd Friday night doubleheaders on Apple TV Plus, which I get. So I was more than happy to tune into it. You said you watched the first game last night or on Friday night, which was Nationals Mets.
Yeah.
And that was Melanie Newman. I don't remember who else.
Chris Jones? No. He was an outfielder for the Diamondbacks.
Oh, Chris Young.
Chris Young.
Yes, Cub fans don't like that Chris Young. We knew game three of the 2007 playoffs. First pitch from Rich Hill was hit approximately a mile and a half, and we all knew
the Ted Lilly. The Ted Lilly home run gets, you know, the replay with the slamming of the glove, but that was the killer.
Yes.
And Hannah Kaiser was a writer for Yahoo.
That's right.
She was the second analyst. And they had, I don't remember her name, but they had a dugout analyst too, because you need four people to talk on TV.
The thing I was impressed by, I liked the graphics.
Yeah. You are not alone. A lot of people express their.
I mean, it was and somebody tweeted back to me, all it is Apple branding on a baseball game. I'm like, yeah, I know. It looks really nice. It's far more subtle than we're used to, but easy to read and good. And they had the, I don't know how much we needed this, but they were predicting outcomes in the lower right-hand corner, which was like base reach. I forgot how they phrased it.
Yeah,
but like the percent chance it was given this count with this hitter, they're going to reach base.
Right.
I like those. It was there was like a Juan Soto. He got to 2-0 at one point, and his was like 84%.
Right.
Ridiculously high number. And then one of the Mets, it wasn't, you know, no pitcher so bad anymore. But one guy, he got to 0-2, and he was like 9%. And I'm like, honestly, this is the stuff I want to know. Like, I can't wait till the Cubs are on. And Jason Hayward faces a lefty, and there's a negative.
Yes.
I'll just screenshot that and just gaze at it for days.
I like those the graphics and the information. It was and subtly relate. I felt like maybe it was a little bit subtly related to gambling and with the percentages, but it didn't have to. It wasn't hitting you on the nose with it. And it was some information that people who weren't gambling could also use in their head to be more informed about what was going on. So I thought it was good for both those things.
Yeah, you know, I'm such a purist. I won't gamble on baseball because, you know, I'm still stung by the whole 1919 White Sox thing.
yes. Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, no, but I'm a purist. He should be. Not only should he not be in the Hall of Fame, they should have drawn and quartered him. Or at least, here's what they should have done to Pete.
He might have liked that.
They should have, tie him up, but you don't have to, the horses don't have to go in four different directions. Just give him a haircut while you've got him, immobilized. I just like the fact that it was interesting and it was subtle, so you didn't have to pay attention to it if you didn't want to, but you would see like just how dramatically the odds would change based on the count. Really the count more than anything.
Right.
And then like a questionable, like a borderline ball strike. We've heard all along, the most important pitch in baseball is the 1-1 pitch. You know, if it goes 2-1 or 1-2, there's no bigger difference.
Right.
And you could actually see that maybe that's not, just baseball BS, that's a real thing. So I didn't like that.
And you mentioned that you liked Beth Mowins on the Cubs broadcast. And I thought Melanie Newman does and did a good job.
Yeah, I think she's good.
I think she was like easily the strongest talker of the group. Sometimes the young Kaiser banter got out of hand a little bit. But as far as like, listenability and competence and, I think Melanie Newman is somebody that should be doing that full time for some team. I know she's she's listed as a play-by-play announcer for the Orioles, but she does, she's down the bench a little bit. And she, that should change somewhere pretty soon, I think.
Who is the play-by-play announcer for the Orioles? Lindsey Nelson?
I looked it up. It's not Lindsey Nelson anymore. No. It's
I know it's not John Miller anymore. Peter Angel has kicked his ass to the coast.
Kevin Brown is on TV, and I can't remember not like the pitcher. A guy named Kevin Brown and somebody on the radio I don't know.
Now the Orioles, is this still true? Do the Orioles own Masson? And so they basically own, Masson also does the Nationals games, and the Orioles own the TV station?
I don't know how the Nationals walked into this, but yeah, it's like a big trap.
It was part of the conditions of the move.
Oh, just keep being there in the first place.
Like, that's right. Because Angelo still owned the Orioles at the time. Because he doesn't own them anymore, right? He's dead, gone.
No, he's alive, but his son runs them more.
Angelo.
John. Yeah.
Angelo.
Jerry Angelo.
Yeah.
I don't know if Angelo is funnier, or
they might be better off if Jerry was owning the team. Okay, so these two they still own it, but I know it was part of. See, like everything else, right. Peter Angelos had to give up part of their territorial rights for the Nationals for Washington to get a team again, and he we talked about him last week, right? Because the labor law came up.
Yeah, right.
What's the Peter Angelos podcast? We talk about him every week. How are we going to work? How say the magic? You know, somebody just won a state because we mentioned Peter Angelos again. I heard it. Write down the timestamp. There was a whole, he had like a whole list of demands. Right. I'm not going to vote for this. And it was more than just that him, because they don't need 100% of him to vote for it. But he could really have gummed up the works if he had really wanted to. And so they made a bunch of concessions. And part of it is the Nationals TV deal sucks. And it sucks because the Orioles get a disproportionate amount of the money.
Right.
And I don't know if that slowly grandfathers itself out. Is that a thing? Or if it's just going to be bad forever. But, you know, the two things that National fans complain about is Masson and the fact that they all have to leave in the seventh inning of every night game because the train stops running.
In the nation's capital of all places.
Sorry, it's the last train. We all got to go home. It's like, what? I have friends who I've been to Cub games with, and because they take the train in from the suburbs, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's the last one, I gotta go. It's like, what? What year is this? But I guess that was the thing. So you watched the early game. Oh, the other thing that happened in the early game, because it's streaming, it just died for a while. Nobody could see it.
Yeah.
Every time, you know, people, cord cutting, it seems like a great idea. Until you really want to watch something that everybody else wants to watch too. And then all of a sudden, nobody can watch it. Like
right.
The Super Bowl. and apparently, Nationals-Mets on the first Friday of the season. But there was a second game. Oh, and there's also a rain delay.
Right.
So the games were overlapping, but hey, it's streaming. That's no big deal. Just, there's a different feed. You can watch this game now. That game was Steven Nelson, we got to talk about something else with Steven Nelson in a minute. That was Steven Nelson was doing the play-by-play, and the color analyst was Hunter Pence, and Katie Nolan was also in the booth, and they also had a sideline reporter who I don't remember who it was. Oh, it was Heidi Watney. People did not enjoy them at all. It was very chatty. It was basically like they were doing their own version of, and then we had a version of it, but they were doing the Manning cast, except they weren't Eli or Peyton, and they weren't talking about the game, and people were getting very annoyed by them. I had no idea that there was a second game, and I had no idea that Katie Nolan was a part of it. And that seemed like poor marketing.
Right.
Like, you do have somebody people have heard of and that people like. You would think you would make a bigger deal out of the fact. But and who knows? I mean, they've got a lot more of these to do. Maybe they'll, you know, all these people will turn and they'll start to enjoy them. But the early returns are it's another waste of Katie Nolan, which is we've got a lot of that ever since she left her YouTube channel. No one has ever figured out how to use her in a way that is takes advantage of her, you know, what she's good at. She's genuinely funny. But it's just another case. She was on Fox. Didn't they start her off? She was on the Regis show. Remember Regis had a talk panel on FS1.
What? Oh, that's right. Yes.
She was on that.
I was thinking of, she was on Regis and Kathy Lee, like Strahan. But yeah, no. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. After Regis had left, Regis Lee and Kelly Lee, retired, he did it was like a 4-person PTI, except it was bad and nobody wanted to watch it. She was on that. Yeah. She went to ESPN, stole her. And then they just basically hid her. They put her on ESPN Plus at a time when nobody watched it. Now people actually watch ESPN Plus, but she's not there anymore. So she can't put her show on there.
Her timing is bad here.
She had a podcast that was pretty good, but it got lost in all of the, you know, unlike, it wasn't as good as this one. So people missed it. But I got to thinking, I wondered if for I mean, she's made a lot of money. She's done fine. But I have a feeling financially she could have made a killing had she just stayed on YouTube. Because I don't know how the kids do it, but there are a lot of people who make a ridiculous amount of money on the YouTube.
My 7-year-old watches something called Mr. Beast all the time. And he's this millionaire or something who like gives away things and islands and 30 cars and gets paid millions of dollars by YouTube to do it. You would think Katie Nolan, you're right, could have stayed at that trough.
Yeah, it's not, nobody's going to hold a bake sale for her. She's made millions of dollars. Do you know who she's dating?
I don't.
Do you watch the show Billions?
I have. Paul Giamatti?
She dates Paul Giamatti. They've been together now for... The guy who plays Muffy, kind of the dopey trader guy, that's her boyfriend. So
okay.
That's about,
it was an athlete at one time, was it not? Was it a hockey player? Isn't it always?
Yeah, those hockey players. I don't know. Honestly, I didn't know who she dated until that, and I only knew it because I watched Billions, which it was absolutely terrible this season. Just god-awful. Like,
well, they got rid of Damian Lewis, didn't they?
Yeah, he said, okay, I'm done. I'm leaving. And the whole plot was terrible.
I don't like the bald guy.
But he's a former in the show. He's a billionaire hedge fund guy who was a basketball star at a fictitious college in Indiana.
The Bezos-like guy? The Bezos? I don't know. The bald?
He's bald. I don't know if he's supposed to be. He's significantly taller than Jeff Bezos.
I mean, yeah. Okay.
It wasn't. I didn't know. But that was.
Is it done?
Oh, no. Well, season's over, but they're coming back. Yeah, like cliffhanger and everything. It's going to be great.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
But there was that. So Friday Night Baseball was very hit or miss on their first attempt, which you kind of expect. With the technical difficulties in Game 1 and the announcing difficulties in Game 2. It did make sense, though, when I saw Steven Nelson pop up on the second game on that Friday as to why he caused a stir in Chicago last week.
Yeah.
And I was like, why was he getting interviewed anyway? He's Kevin Millar's sidekick on that stupid inside pitch show or whatever they call it.
Intentional talk.
Intentional talk. I like inside pitch better. That's probably something else.
Isn't that Chris Russo's high hard one? What's that called?
That's High Heat. Oh, God. That Russo show. That is just... The only thing I like about it, there's two things he says that I enjoy. He can't say Brewers. The Brewers. The Brewers. The Milwaukee Brewers. And he has a weird way, and he says this word a lot. He says scenario. And there's a lot of scenarios. He's like, oh, we got to talk about the Chicago Cup scenario. There are certain words he just can't say. There are names he can't say, which that part is entertaining. I just don't need him yelling at me for a half hour, so I just can't watch the show. I just can't.
I don't want to be, like, too ableist, but, like, how do you talk that much and you're unable to pronounce things? I don't get it.
It's part of his charm.
You think he? It is? It's charming?
I guess. I don't know. I mean, there are people who will go to their graves claiming Mike and the Mad Dog, that was the greatest radio show of all time. And all I know is that, you know, I used to watch it every once in a while because it was on, first it was on MSG, then it was on Yes, and it would be on, and they'd be talking about sports. I'd watch it and go, I'm completely underwhelmed by these two. The thing I liked about it, though, was they sat them, they were facing each other, but they weren't directly across the table from each other. You know, they were kind of like kitty corner on the table. They never looked at each other. They were on for 5 hours, and they never looked at each other. They both looked down, or they looked around each other, or whatever. And it was like, all right, we're not even pretending this is you're simulcast. Buddies. You're on TV. You might want to do something TV-wise, but they just didn't.
Right.
I guess that part of it was fine. But, you know, Mike, it became a caricature of, he was a caricature the whole time, but he really became one. He's got a podcast now, but, you know, when he went solo, you know, there were the rumors that, Bill Simmons was going to become his number two. He was going to be a sidekick. And then that didn't happen. And then he decided he would just do it on his own. And there's, you know, this, Funhouse, the Twitter feed, Twitter thing. He constantly gave video of Mike falling asleep. Which is just great. There's nothing better than this long rambling call. Just this guy going on and on, and you see Mike like nodding, and you think he's nodding, and then you realize no, his head, this gravity is starting to take that enormous head, and it's going to pull it right down on the desk.
He's oddly easy to fool, too.
The prank callers would call it and just throw names at him, and he didn't want to admit that he didn't, you know, who they were, so he would just go along with it and realize he was wrong. They had the great clip where he insisted that I don't know how long ago this was now, but about 10 years ago, I had a chance. I could have coached the NFL. I got an offer, and I gave it a lot of thought, but you know, that's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of time away from the family. I know I could do it. It's like, what do you mean? You know, you could do it. you haven't played football since seventh grade. Like, no, you couldn't. You couldn't. No one offered you a job to be an NFL assistant coach. You're blatantly lying to us now. Just stop it. The whole High Heat show apparently came about through some kind of like weird partnership. Well, first, it was on SiriusXM, and it was part of that huge deal he signed with Sirius. He got his daily show, and he wanted a show on MLB Network, or on the MLB Radio, and that's what they gave him. And then apparently MLB Network was like, you know what, we don't have enough programming to fill the day. Let's throw a camera on Mike when he does his little baseball show. But when that happened, they moved his show. They moved it to noon my time. which is the only thing I was important about. And I at that I got used to at lunch, I would listen to Mike Farron and Jim Duquette. I liked their show.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't on because there was this guy screaming at me through the radio. And so I tweeted Farron and I was like, hey, what's the deal? And so he messaged me and basically said, you know, I mean, we have to move. If Russo wants us to move, we have to move. And this is permanent. This is not going to be a thing. So I had it out for that show ever since then. It screwed up my lunch. I couldn't digest with that guy yelling at me.
No.
It's bad for him. So I thought this would be a good question for you. A couple of things I found out today. How about this? We talked a little bit about the blackouts and how, like, if you live in like Las Vegas, there's like 7 teams you can't see, and if you're in Iowa, it's kind of the same thing. Phil Swan, the guy that runs the TV Answer Man Twitter thing, had a thing today. The Giants and A's are blacked out in Guam. He had a reader who asked him, "Do you know why? I'm in Guam. I can't watch the Giants or the A's."
Is it because it's like L.A.?
Well, but that would make more sense, right? Shouldn't it be the Dodgers and the Angels, not the Giants? I mean, why is Guam considered the Bay Area? Because they have a bay? Did somebody, like, jot a note down wrong at some computer programmer?
Doesn't everybody have a bay?
So as far as Phil couldn't, he can't get a direct answer from MLB. But from the research he did, you know, Guam is, it's a long ways away. It's like 7,000 miles or something away from the bay. It's not, but apparently, and I don't remember if this is a complete, I'm way off on a tangent now. There are a bunch of baseball fans in Belize, a bunch of Cub fans in Belize.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for it is that, there was a bar down there that was able to get a pirated feed of WGN, and they would show Cub games during the day. And so all these people that hung out in the bar during the day just started watching the Cubs, even though baseball wasn't big in Belize.
Right.
But the Cubs all of a sudden became huge in Belize. Well, I said in Guam, they don't, you know, they somehow got a hold of San Francisco, a feed that they could show San Francisco TV. And they didn't do it for sports. They did it to show American, just so they could watch American TV.
Mm-hmm.
And so his theory is that that's why. That they basically at some point said, well, they get San Francisco TV, so we'll just block out the A's and the Giants. They're like, no, we don't really get it. Like, we had to steal that. You're punishing us now. All we want to do is, you know, watch Anthony Desclafani starts, and we can't now because, you know, you're depriving us of exciting Giants baseball. They didn't get to see Ruff on the Move.
Ruff on the Move. That was you know what? You made fun of Zach, but it's hard to compare to that call. That was very good. I mean, anything wouldn't look good, sound good. Next to that Ruff on the Move.
It was great. Actually, it was an excuse to do two things. Play that call, because I really like it, and then make fun of Zach.
Right. Well, you get a twofer.
It was what we call in the business a win-win. Somebody had this, maybe it was Richard Deitch. I think it was Richard Deitch. Asked the question, were there two wrong people to ask about this, but he basically asked a question to general populace. Are you interested in, or basically, will you watch games, if you're a baseball fan, will you watch games of teams that aren't the team you follow? Basically, this whole idea that baseball is such a regional sport now.
Yeah.
Is baseball really just kind of chasing their tail with these, you know, trying to add more national packages when they... Probably the smartest thing they could do would instead be to figure out how to deal with the blackout thing and let every fan, wherever they live, pay them money to watch the one team they really want to watch.
Which they are willing to pay. I mean, they already do. That's sort of what, you know, I remember when MLB TV became a thing. I thought, well, you know, it didn't occur to me that blackouts would either continue to be a problem or become a problem or whatever. I thought, well, if you're going to pay, it's like the DirecTV thing for football, no matter what region you're in, if you pay hard cash for this season, you should be able to watch whatever game you want. And can't we figure out how to, if it's circumventing cable subscriptions, which I think is the financial reason why they still have blackouts, to force people to get a certain kind of cable. I don't know. Then I'm sort of losing the point, but once you start paying $150 or whatever it is a year, you should be able to watch whatever you want. I mean, that sounds too reasonable. And MLB should figure out a way to make it palatable to their cable TV partners. And I don't know. They're making too much money not to, and yet they still do blackouts.
If you go to the MLB.tv page to order extra innings, you're greeted with this very enticing option for a lot of fans, which is you can just buy one team.
Yeah.
$119. You can see every game of your favorite team. And then there's a little asterisk and said, blackouts apply.
Right.
So if you're in an area where that team is blacked out, it won't let you buy it, at least. Now, you don't spend $119 and then you just get to look at a screensaver. But
right.
Now, from what I understand, the reason for the blackouts is, in typical baseball fashion, something that isn't really a thing anymore. It was to protect the local markets of all these teams for this reason, which was... And you work for an entity that at one point, before Bally bought in, whatever, the regional Fox Sports, whatever.
Yeah.
Teams were able to bilk them out of huge sums for their cable thing because they got the exclusive rights for that entire area for that. The only way you were going to be able, everybody's going to have to be, they're going to have to get Fox Sports Midwest if you want to watch the Cardinals. This is how it's going to work. So, of course, we'll give you $1 billion over 10 years because we're going to be printing money because we're going to be all these ads. And, in fact, the Cardinals were like one of the last teams that really got to cash in for this. The Cubs, of course, were a day late and a dollar short, like normal for them. They grabbed a hold of their own, like, ooh, you know, we're going to start our own network and this is going to be great. And, there wasn't anybody to pay them big rights fees. And then they battled with all the providers who were like, no, regional sports networks, we're already spending too much money on these. Right. A lot of our viewers don't want to do it because that's another thing, you know, part of ESPN's success for all those years, I mean, it's obviously still very successful, is they get money two ways. They get money paid from cable and satellite providers for every household that gets their network, plus they sell ads. So they have two, and that's what the Cardinals want to do, and that's what the Cubs thought they were going to do. The Cubs were like, well, we won't have to ever pay ourselves for the rights to the game, so this will all be profit, and we're going to sell all these ads. We're just going to be swimming in cash, and then we're going to get all this money from all these cable, you know, we're the Cubs. We're going to be able to charge more to the satellite and cable providers than anybody else can because we have the most rabid fans in baseball.
Yeah.
And then the cable provider said, nobody's going to pay that. No. And so they have they won't say exactly how much, but everybody knows they got far less than they thought they were going to get. But a lot of teams now, the Cubs included, are like, they don't want the blackouts anymore. It's like, no, lift that stuff. Because the Cubs are, you know, Sinclair wants to sell packages direct to the consumer.
Direct to market.
And Major League Baseball right now is basically saying, well, you're still going to have to honor the blackouts. And they're like, well, that's going to kill, you know, nobody's going to want to buy these then. Because part of it is we can get it to areas in our own market that they won't be reliant on cable anymore. But if we have the blackouts, they are going to be. So that screws everything up. And it's ridiculous that they have this sport, and they're the only sport that has anything like this. You don't get blacked out of anything else. Just baseball.
Right.
So congratulations, guys. You've done it again. And it's not like they just had 99 days of a lockout where they had intensive negotiations where one of the things they could have done would have been to have changed their own rules as far as the blackouts. I think they can do it any time, though. I don't think that's a collectively bargained. It doesn't have to be. It's one of those things where it's smart to have the players have input, but right. I don't think they have to. I think it's a thing that Manfred can just say. He's going to get the owners to agree, but if he can, and they'll never, and that's the problem. They could change it like tomorrow. Right. They just don't seem to want to do it. And one thing that's not helping right now is the teams that are trying to go around and do it on their own. Manfred basically told them that, which is, all right, well, you're going to take away our motivation to fix your blackout problem then.
Yeah.
We're just going to stick you with it. So congratulations. Because one of the things that I was a sucker. When I was a kid, we had a satellite dish. We could watch anything that was in the glory days of Wild Feeds. And
yeah.
I mean, we even got to, Dad and I watched a Cubs spring training game where they didn't go to commercial.
Mm-hmm.
We got to see the Wild Feed. And you got to hear Harry between innings. And Harry basically spent that time helping Arnie find hot babes in the stands. It was great. He's like, oh, he went down the first baseline. No, a little farther up. Oh, there she is.
That would have been a great thing to record.
Yeah. Dad one time watched, he got all excited. He watched Dan Rather do the CBS Evening News without commercials. And he got the full Dan Rather experience. He got to see him like with a mirror, like fixing his hair during one. He got to see him berate somebody off. Like he was yelling about the teleprompter was wrong or something. He was screaming at a guy. He couldn't wait. I was like at basketball practice or something. I got home and he couldn't wait to give me the rundown of all the embarrassing things he got to see Dan Rather do. But one of the things I loved about the package, and still do, is the varying quality of the announcers from team to team. And that's why I'm such a big, like, Dwayne Kuiper and Mike Kruko fan. I think ever since I started watching, I thought they were awesome. And it was cool to be able to just at night, you know, turn on a game and listen to Vin Scully just talk for, you know. And I've told the story before about how it could get a little creepy with Vin. Like, if you were just alone, you know, and it's just the way he's talking, it's just you and Vin. It's like he's, you know. Like he's trying to lull you to sleep.
There's a seduction happening.
Yeah, like, Ben, I'm tucking these sheets in, and they better be tucked in when I wake up.
Well, Dan Bernstein used to do his Vin Scuzzy. When he get a little randy.
And I never thought, as a kid growing up, I hated Keith Hernandez. I hated him. I mean, he played for the Cardinals and the Mets. What was there like? And I guess he spent like a week and a half for the Dodgers too, right? It turns out that in my old age and his old age, I love Keith. Like the Mets broadcast is amazing.
It is.
And just the fact that he'll go and tell these ridiculous stories about his cat, about Hachi. and you're just, you sit there like, holy crap, this is actually entertaining. That was like the Red Sox, especially when it was Don Orsillo and Jerry Remy.
Yeah.
Of course, they played all the highlights when Jerry died, when his tooth fell out, and Don was trying to put his tooth back in the thing. And the one where they just watching this innocuous a foul ball down the third base line, and then on the replay they noticed that, they saw that a guy's beer went everywhere. And they noticed that. They were going to make fun of that. And then all of a sudden they realized there's a piece of pizza just went flying into the...
He throws a pizza.
But now with him gone, and poor Jerry. He had cancer like 5 times.
Right.
So he was constantly missing. Well, they basically made Dennis Eckersley a permanent part of the team, and now he's the color guy.
Right.
And he's... He's entertaining. But the thing about Dennis, I've talked about in a different podcast, was he'll talk about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite things was I was watching, there was back when they were still the Indians. And he was talking about the Indians. Like, oh, he said, I was talking to my friend, Rick Manning, who does the games for the Indians before the game. He is my friend. He's married to my wife. And I knew the story. That's why I was really surprised that, you know, Dennis Eckersley's wife left him for a teammate. They were teammates in Cleveland.
Right.
She had an affair with Rick Manning and divorced Dennis and married him. And apparently they're still married. And Dennis is just chatting about it. And I'm like, holy crap, he really will just talk about anything. So. So, you know, here we are. It's the first week of baseball, and I was ready to overdose on baseball. I kind of have anyway. But it is kind of frustrating. I mean, I have it easy because the only teams I'm blacked out for are two teams I don't want to watch, the Cardinals and the Brewers.
Mm-hmm.
And I never used to be blacked out for them because when I had DirecTV, all you have to do is buy the regional sports package. It's like an extra $10 or whatever. And I could actually watch the game. I couldn't watch them on extra innings. It would be blacked out. But I could go right to the channel.
Yeah.
And I could go to Fox Sports North or Midwest, and I could watch the games. And so if I really wanted to, I still could. I just have to, you know. When AT&T bought DirecTV and decided they never wanted to put another penny into the technology or anything, I said, I think maybe it's time to drop you. So I did.
Yeah.
So there's that. Did I guess we could wrap up here, but does anything jump out, anything exciting about the first week of baseball? In Kansas City, you guys got to see the debut of Bobby Witt Jr. Oh, I do have something I want to ask you. What the hell is going on with the center field camera? Why is it always wet?
I have I know why. I don't know how they can stop it exactly. They, Royal Stadium, Kauffman Stadium has fountains, and it's been very windy opening day. It's 40 mile an hour winds, and the subsequent days have been windy too. And it's sea spray or whatever. It's the wind comes, it takes the water out of the fountain, puts it into the stands. I mean, you don't have to be a TV camera. People were getting wet. I was getting wet. I was out there Sunday with my kids, and we went to a game and sat out in the bleachers. And, you know, the fountains were, it was movable. You know, they were escaping the pipes and getting everything wet. So that's what that is. It's and the cameras are right in front of some of the fountains. And
so they're here. So it asks a question, or
Begs.
I use this wrong, and remember this crap co-host Mike Donahue will be like, that's not what begs the question means. Could they turn the fountains off during the game?
Oh, you can turn them off. Yes, yeah. Sure. So well, you turn them off. What happens is they're kind of always running a little, but they get more animated when they want them to be.
Right.
So it's almost like there's a waterfall effect. And that is the steady, the constant. And then it becomes like,
oh,
let's put on a Bellagio.
Okay. So it's not like they just have them, you know.
It is not willy-nilly.
Pumped
they
up to the max.
To a certain
and it's
degree.
Like, it's getting the camera wet. Maybe when it's 40 mile an hour winds blowing straight out to center field, maybe we should turn the fountains off.
But, you know, when.
I mean, I know it's not as pretty.
When they are, I don't want to say dormant, but when they are at their low tide. It's still really windy and there's still a lot of water and it's, you know, pooled.
Oh,
and it will, you know, like, I don't know, like an earthquake in Japan in a water bed or not a water bed, jacuzzi, you know, you've seen the videos. It's like that.
It did make for some good footage though of, the guy, all of a sudden, a hand and a towel appearing in the camera.
Yes, yes.
And then the director
like
quickly cutting away. That was funny. Okay, back to my actual, the more pertinent question, which was.
Oh, I like that question.
Which was about things that impressed you the first
on the baseball field.
4 days. Yeah, the actual baseball.
Well, you know, we've talked about Bobby Witt, I think, like each of the past 3 weeks, and he got off to a really good start, making all the plays on defense, and he's been, you know, as advertised. And he's got a little bit of a strikeout thing at the plate, which might limit him a little bit, but the defense and the instincts and the natural, I mean, the Royals have like three guys that could be shortstops on the left side of their infield at third, short, and second. Chicago area's own Nicky Lopez at second, and Adalberto, formerly Raul Mondesi Jr., at short, and Witt over at third. And Witt's been at the top, second in the lineup, and hitting really well, and off to a great start. One guy who came through Kansas City over the weekend, Stephen Kwan, who was kind of a middling prospect, but a guy sort of like, Brett Gardner, or a short man, maybe about 5'8 or 5'9, but a really good batting eye, and has developed a good, like, doubles, maybe 10 home run power stroke, and guy who went to a recently good college, Oregon State, that has a lot of major league players on it. They won a national championship a few years ago. He's gotten on base an incredible amount of times in the first four and now five games of the year. And I talked to him a little bit, and that's a really good story. It's a guy who scouts, you know, they like some of the things about him, but it was one of those things where, you know, we don't know if this is gonna play in the majors, and he's been obviously good so far, and that's been a fun thing.
How old is he?
He's 24.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, if he's 30, then the Cubs might be interested in training for him. But, you know, not at 24. That's way too young. He's not going to fit into their plans.
So, yeah, he's his parents were first generation. His dad is Chinese, and his mom's Japanese. And there aren't a lot of Asian American players. I mean, the best player in the league is Shohei Ohtani. But most of those players came over from Japan.
The second best player is Suzuki.
Yes, yes. But it's like, and there probably are actually more Asian players, or some Asian American players, than people realize. But it's still a minority among minorities. And it's kind of neat that he's representing that. And, he's grew up the All-American kid, and his parents were driving him to travel ball games all over California, and his dad didn't want to push him into it, and he's like, no, I want to do this. And it's a really nice story. So Stephen Kwan is, you know, kind of every man size, and is off to a great start, and his teammates love him. They're all changing their Twitter avatars to look like him, and it's just kind of a neat thing.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you mentioned that Albert had a home run today, so he's now 20 short of 700.
Right.
The stat about Albert that I like, two things. Number one, he's far and away grounded in the most double plays in baseball history.
Right.
And I think he can put that out of reach this year, if it isn't already. Although early results, Nick Madrigal, I think, seems to want to make a run at it. It's going to take him 20 years, but I think he could probably do it. but the other stat about Albert was, for the longest time, he had walked more times than he struck out for his career. And his last few years in Anaheim kind of torpedoed that.
Ruined that,
he
yes.
has no shot at doing that. One of the things that we mostly because it's top of mind now, when we do remember this crap, we've gotten a couple of Cub teams from the 80s, and we like to look at we're fascinated by how seldom Bill Buckner ever struck out. It's like a ridiculous amount, but he also never walked,
right?
Ever. But the other thing is, the Cubs currently on their 20 and their 30 man roster, they have, I believe they're split randomly. They have 15 pitchers and 15 hitters. A lot of teams have done that. But we're looking at teams in the Cubs teams in the 80s who for the entire season used like 12 or 15 pitchers.
Yeah.
And there was Scott Servais the other day going on and on about how he couldn't believe they were going to restrict him to 13 pitchers. It's like, Scott, that's 8 guys in your bullpen. You can't get by with less than 8 guys in a bullpen. But they can't. And then they're complaining about the, although it doesn't count yet, they're not going to worry about it in April, but the you can only go up or down 5 times.
Yeah.
And for teams like the Brewers and the Dodgers who just shuttle pitchers incessantly, that's going to cut into that a little bit.
There's somebody, and of course his name is escaping me, but who's been like DFA'd like 5 times already. He's just gone from team to team and he's like, please stop. I just want to play baseball. I think the Angels, he's with the Angels right now.
There was the guy, and I can't think of his, this is great, I can't think of his name either. Last year who got who kept shuttling between the Mariners and the Brewers?
Jacob Nottingham, right, I believe, catcher.
And then the Dodgers had a guy that they optioned 12 times last year.
Yes.
12 times. Yeah. So then maybe there was a reason that they actually needed the rule. But yeah, so baseball's up and running. Cubs clearly the best team in baseball. It's very exciting. And they've got no production out of either Frank Schwindel or Patrick Wisdom yet. And just wait till those guys get hot. Whew. They're going to be unstoppable. They have one more game in Pittsburgh, and then they're off to Denver. They're going to Coors for 4 games over the weekend. And this seems mean. Alec Mills has been on the injury list with a sore back. And they said, oh, yeah, he'll be ready to go in Denver.
Oh, thank you.
If I was Alec, I'd be like, you know what? I think it flared up.
It's tightening up on me right now.
I don't know. When do we play the Pirates again? I feel like that's when it might loosen up.
Have, sort of on that note, have the Cubs broadcasters, oh, yeah, Shambi must have, talked about how there's a humidor in every ballpark now. Mm-hmm. Has he mentioned that with the, what's the effect in Chicago?
I don't know. They probably, I would guess that the humidor they're using is one that Irv Kupcinet and Jack Brickhouse used to actually keep cigars in during when they were doing Bears games. I think it was Boog that was going on about how, well, in some parks, it'll put humidity into the balls, and other parks it'll take it out depending on what the atmospheric conditions are. I don't know. I think more than the humidor, the wind howling in on Sunday, like 40 miles an hour, had more of an effect than the humidor did. It's a good question, though, because I believe before, I'm probably really wrong about this, but I remember, I think I was a kid reading that, like, Wrigley was, like, the second highest National League park above sea level.
Really?
But it was like 94 feet or something. I mean, it's ridiculous. There was really only, this would have been before, obviously before Colorado and before Arizona. I don't know that it has. Actually, I know they didn't talk about it. They didn't talk about the effects it's actually had. They just talked about how it'll be interesting to see. And I guess after 3 games at Wrigley, they're not ready.
It's not a sample size yet.
Yeah. To say whatever it's going to be, but all right. Well, that's we almost got a full week under our belts, and I guess we'll just let the guys keep playing and see what happens.
That's what we should do. Stay out of their way.
All right. We'll do that.
Okay.
All right. Well, until next week or next time. I guess probably next week. All right. Well, thanks, David.
Okay, Andy.
Many of us have herpes.